This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about X-Men 97, and we're going to present an interview with two of the show's cast members. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editors Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And BJ Colangelo.
Hiya.
All right, you all. I stopped watching X-Men 97 after the second episode. I watched two episodes to prepare for it, and then I just kind of fell off. I got sidetracked by personal stuff, life stuff, work stuff, and I just never got back around to it. But I know both of you have been keeping up with the show, and so I thought we could use this as a good opportunity to serve as like a check-in conversation about how X-Men 97 is progressing. So I guess, BJ, I want to start with you. How has the show progressed since its premiere? What do you think about it these days?
So first things first, you dipping out after two episodes, as the kids say, bruh, what? you are missing out. It's progressing beautifully. There are episodes that feel like little standalone adventures, but it all is tying into the bigger picture. The stakes are extremely high. I'm very emotionally invested every week. This show is ripping my heart into pieces in a good way. It's also being very upfront with its messaging in a way that I'm actually kind of shocked Disney Plus let them get away with. It's great. I want more. I am very, very impatient waiting for next week.
What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, it's been fantastic to watch the show play out because it is really digging into some pretty heartbreaking territory. You know, it's telling mature stories. They're not really like dumbing this down for kids or anything like that. It's maintained the same, you know, promising style, both in the storytelling and in, you know, how the characters are presented and animation. And also just done a lot of really exciting things by incorporating comic book arcs that we haven't seen explored in X-Men the Animated Series yet. It's been fascinating to see just how deep and dark the series has been willing to get. It's been incredibly cool.
So I, like I said, I've not been catching up, but I think it was pretty much impossible to avoid at least one major spoiler for something that's happened in the show. So I think now is the time where we can just say spoilers for everything that's happened in X-Men 97 so far, because I want you guys to get into some details here. Just give me like the gist of the season, like plot wise, what has happened. I know that one character, maybe multiple, have died at this point. So give me like the broad strokes of what's been going on. Either one of you.
I mean, so many things have happened. That's the thing is like with the X-Men, like, it's such fast paced storytelling that like tons happens in like individual episodes. I would say like the biggest beats so far, obviously we saw Magneto inherit the X-Men after Professor X has been presumed dead, even though he's not actually dead. He's just hanging out in space. And then we have seen the Sentinels return thanks to Bolivar Trask. We've seen the biggest developments recently that have been really shaping like what the series is moving towards has been there was a huge attack on the mutant haven of Genosha by this master mold Tri-Sentinel, and that's where Gambit was unfortunately killed. And that's been a huge upsetting thing for Rogue and the rest of the X-Men. And that has also led into a larger mystery as far as who was behind that attack. And the last week's episode revealed that it was Mr. Sinister behind the attack. And then this week's episode revealed that it's not just Mr. Sinister. It's another villain known as Bastion, who we haven't seen in the animated series yet, but has a very significant arc in the comics. Where he runs this secret government plan known as Operation Zero Tolerance, which is another way of trying to get rid of mutants. But there's a little bit of a twist, I think, in this version of Bastion, because in the comics, Bastion is like this blend of a Master Mold Sentinel and Nimrod, a Sentinel from the future. And there's this like weird mystical portal thing that causes him to become this like version of Bastion. But here, it seems it's like a partial creation of Mr. Sinister that is also a villain from the X-Men's past. Because there's a line in this episode where Mr. Sinister reminds Bastion, he's like, well, you are also, you know, one of the like the villains that you are looking down upon now. And he's like, yes, but I've evolved. So there's something in Bastion's history now that the X-Men have faced before. There's a chance that could still be Nimrod, because Nimrod did fight the X-Men after following Bishop back in time from the future in Days of Future Past, the first part of that episode from the original series. But basically, we're heading into a three-part finale that will definitely adapt the Operation Zero Tolerance comic book arc, but with some changes that help it fit into X-Men 97 a little bit more.
Man, you weren't lying. Okay.
Yeah, and like, and that's like, those are our big like action and story beats. There's also a lot of their relationships are complicated. You know, Rogue and Magneto are having their love affair, which is, you know, rooted in the comics, but that complicates her feelings surrounding Gambit's death because she wasn't, you know, fully with him at the time that he died. So now there's a lot of like, what did I miss out on saying? And at the same time, Jubilee and Roberto DiCosto are, you know, off doing some of their other stuff, helping him come to grips with the fact that he is a mutant. He needs to tell his family. There's a bit of like a coming out thing that happens in the most recent episode. So there's like also a lot of interpersonal things happening. And then, of course, Jean Grey and, you know, Cyclops had their kid, Nathan, who later, you know, is going to become Cable, like, do there's so much happening and it all makes sense when you watch it, but when you try to like repeat it to another person, it sounds ridiculous.
And Captain America showed up in this episode.
Yeah,
too.
Captain America showed up.
Wait, really?
Yeah, yes. Captain America is he's investigating. They don't know what Operation Zero Tolerance is yet. He's following this thread of something called OZT. And Rogue runs into him because she's trying to track down who's behind the Genosha attack and Gambit's death. And so she has a little tiff with Captain America where they're both looking for the same person, but Rogue doesn't have time for his, you know, government cop bullshit.
Huh. Interesting. So, yeah. BJ, do you think the Gambit death thing is actually going to stick? Does it seem like the show has treated it with, I guess, a manner of seriousness where, like, it would be too ridiculous if they went back on it at this point?
Man, I hope that it doesn't stick only because I love Remy so much. But the way that the show is presenting it, it feels as if it's a final decision. But yeah. I think like it's kind of understood in superhero worlds, like no one's ever really dead. Like that's just kind of how that functions. But at least if it is going to bring him back, is not showing its hand. Like at no point do I feel like, oh, it's okay, he'll be back. I don't feel that way. I feel like he might be dead, and that is really depressing. So if they do bring him back, people are going to be very, very excited. But if they don't, it hasn't been, you know, showcased or like implied in any way, at least from my perspective.
What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, this episode has a proper funeral for Gambit with all the X-Men in attendance, and they also threw in some deep cut references to characters that only appeared in a single episode of the original series. There was this one called Externally Yours that dove into Gambit's origins and what he did before he joined the X-Men, which involves these two groups called the Thieves Guild and the Assassins Guild. And so at that funeral, you see Remy's brother, Bobby, there, and also a couple other key people who were involved in that storyline from those guilds, which was a kind of a nice deep cut Easter egg to see. But yeah, it seems like they are keeping him dead for, you know, at least a little while here. I do wonder, there's a part of me that thinks it could be possible that they could do some kind of variation on, there's a line, or there's a story arc in Marvel Comics where Gambit becomes Death, one of the Apocalypse's four horsemen, forcing him to fight against the X-Men. And I think it could be interesting if somehow Bastion uses the Prime Sentinel technology to resurrect Gambit and have that be like a really dark thing for the X-Men to have to deal with suddenly, with him back from the dead, but also not on their side.
Yeah.
But since that storyline did deal with Apocalypse, I don't know how likely it is, but that would be an interesting spin for them to put on that.
BJ, I wonder if you think the show has made an effort to differentiate itself from the original series in any way, or does it really truly still feel like a continuation?
For me, it really does feel like a continuation. The only things that feel very distinct is that obviously its sense of humor feels more in line with today, not to the point where things are anachronistic, but in a way that this is being made with like understanding what people are interested in now. Because like, obviously, for example, J. Robert Oppenheimer has been around forever, but hearing like what are essentially Oppenheimer jokes in, you know, episode 7, it was like, you know, it works for the time period, but Oppie's a hot ticket right now. Like, that feels like very current in as far as I'm concerned. And I think that's where it's done really, really well. I mean, there's an entire episode where they're Jubilee and Sunspot are in a video game, and it's a Motendo, which is very much like a Nintendo, but part of the story is dealing with, you know, the dangers of nostalgia and not moving forward and kind of being obsessed with, you know, the things that you're obsessed with as a teenager. And I feel like that is a very good commentary for what a lot of us that are sort of living in arrested development now are dealing with. So that's how it is for me. Like, it very much feels like a continuation, but its sensibilities are in its storytelling are making sure that they're easily identifiable with what we're going through as people now.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it's, I think to piggyback on that, it feels contemporary in all the right ways, because like Bo DeMeo, who was, you know, obviously let go from X-Men just before the premiere happened, he had a whole thing that came out after that big episode when Genosha was attacked, talking about how he knew that he wanted to do that storyline from the beginning because it was something that really shook up like the comfortable sense of nostalgia that people would have gotten into around the time that that episode came about. You know, you're feeling good about how the X-Men are being portrayed, and like, it's putting you back in this groove of what the series used to be, and then throwing in this shocking element really just like changes everything and makes things a lot more serious and significant. So it's not just this, you know, nostalgic fun romper like, oh man, I love the X-Men. It's like, oh shit, we're dealing with some like dark serious stuff here along with, you know, that nostalgic bend. So yeah, I really think that they've found a really nice balance between giving people something that feels comfortable and nostalgic, but also like giving them something that is still new and, you know, really shaking up that framework.
And the political language of this show as well feels very, very current. And the thing that always, you know, drives a lot of fans of X-Men crazy is when people decry like, oh, the X-Men went woke. And it's like, well, then you didn't understand the X-Men when they started. It has always been about, you know, the underrepresented and the marginalized. Like, that's the whole point of X-Men. Mm-hmm. But the way that this series is approaching its political language, it very much feels like the things that we're seeing with Black Lives Matter protests, with the fights for LGBTQIA+ equality, with the genocide in the Middle East. Like, all of these things feel very much like embedded in the conversations and the framing of the attacks on the mutants in X-Men. Like, the parallels are so crystallized. And I think that now, because of things like social media, where people are way more aware of the language that is used and how you discuss these topics, that it's just becoming clearer in watching this versus maybe in the 90s, where I think it was just as explicit. But I just think the general public wasn't as informed about, you know, global, international, social relations as they are now.
Right, or like willing to have that conversation in an open way. So, yeah. I want to say I saw in Bo DeMeo's message, he mentioned something about like the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando. So like, yeah, definitely like real world parallels coming in pretty strong there. I wanted to ask you before we go to your interview, BJ, I wanted to ask both of you if you had any like favorite, I guess, character moments or storylines that have really like resonated with you as you've been watching the show. Brad, I want to start with you.
For me, I thought the Genosha episode was incredible because you didn't see it coming, and it's such a big death to deal with because, you know, Gambit is such a popular character, and watching that play out has been really fascinating. I think for me, it's just like a general overall appreciation because the way that they have picked up the way that the X-Men were portrayed in the original series, both in voice casting and in writing them, has just been a perfect carryover. You know, I've been super impressed by, you know, just the way that the original voice cast, you know, sounds exactly like they used to, like they're not missing a beat, how new cast members, you know, fit into the cast and have replicated the voices that came before them. And so it's just, I think I continue to be in awe at how this series has simply picked up the baton and hasn't stopped running since it came back. And I think it really is, you know, is one of the best attempts that there has been to do a sort of a revival of something that was popular so many years ago and have done it without, you know, really having any major discrepancies. Like I don't really have anything to complain about as far as how this series has carried on. So yeah, that's really, it's really just more of a general appreciation for me rather than anything specific.
What about you, BJ?
For me, something that I keep just being so refreshed by is how often the X-Men are allowed and given the space to show righteous anger, because there is this awful thing in our culture that we refer to as like the model minority, which is this idea that if you are marginalized in some way, like you have to be better, faster, stronger, smarter, kinder than everyone else around you. You must always be grateful. You can never, ever complain or even acknowledge the fact that you are being mistreated because of the ways that you are different outside of like cis, straight, white, heteronormative life. And what that ends up happening from that is that you see a lot of people who are treated like crap not be allowed to say, hey, this is messed up. I'm being treated poorly. This isn't fair. I'm angry. Like, you're not allowed to be angry. And throughout these last couple episodes, we have been seeing so much more of this righteous anger, even from Cyclops. Like, if you get Scott Summers to like break his own rules and stop being like the golden boy and be like, nah, this is messed up, like, you know, things have gone so far because that man loves rules. And so like, you're seeing that with a lot of these characters where they're like, human beings don't deserve our help. They don't appreciate us. They're horrible to us. They're killing us. They're, you know, trying to wipe us out. This is no way to live. We should not be putting up with this. And obviously, like, at the end of the day, the X-Men are superheroes. But the fact that this show is giving them the space to at least vocalize their frustrations is so refreshing because, you know, I talk about it a lot. I'm a gay woman. I'm married to a trans woman. Every single day is navigating that space of somebody treating me like absolute dog shit and not being able to say anything about it for fear of, you know, setting back the entire movement or making members of my community look bad. And it's really frustrating. So getting to watch the X-Men while out is some nice fantasy wish fulfillment for me.
That's awesome. Okay, so let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So, BJ, you had a chance to speak with Holly Chow and Guy Augustini, who voice, Jubilee and Sunspot, right?
Yes.
Okay. So here is your conversation with them.
Well, hello. My name is BJ Colangelo. I'm coming to you from Slash Film. I'm so excited to talk with you both. How are you doing today?
Awesome.
I'm doing fantastic. So excited.
Amazing. Amazing. So over the last 15 years or so, superhero entertainment has been having a bit of a moment. But the last year or so, there's been a lot of talk of quote unquote superhero fatigue. But I think that X-Men 97 is proof positive that that's not necessarily the case. And people are probably tired of something else because the fandom is just as rabid for this show as ever before. So I'm curious if both of you could comment on what you think it is that makes X-Men 97 so special and allows it to escape these accusations of superhero fatigue.
Me first. So as a rabid fan myself, there's never a bad time to bring back this thing that we loved so much from when it was on, you know, for those of us that it hits with. For all the new fans that are coming in, I feel like what they're seeing is our show is so different, and our show is, I feel, going places that that either the original series wasn't allowed to go to at that time, and that the more recent sort of forays into superherodom, you know, just also offer something different, so different and so necessary and so unique and special.
I 100% agree. And I just also think that, I mean, it's just that the writing has been so incredible. I mean, everything obviously that's been coming with the show is just so strong that I think like it's been making this, you know, it's been this hit because it, you know, it's hitting so like such a broad, vast of, you know, age range that is just marvelous, you know, and so I think that's why we're like, oh, this is reviving everything and giving like a bit of a, you know, not hope, but you know, there's up because it's, they've been fun, but I think it's just a different level that it's really you know, happening right now.
Beautiful. And I love that you brought up the age thing, because both Jubilee and Roberto da Costa are the youngest of the group. And I think you can definitely hear that in both the optimism and annoyance with adults with Jubilee and sort of this cocky, rebellious streak in Roberto, the very teenage, like, I'm invincible, you can't tell me what to do. So I'm curious how you both channel these like very distinctly teenage energies into your performances, despite not being teenagers anymore yourselves.
For one thing, I'm very immature, so that helps. I mean, I feel like it's so relatable at any age, though. Even if you're 60-something, I feel like there's something in you that connects with that, being the baby of the group, or not being taken as seriously, or being sort of sensitive and feeling the need for that kind of protection, you know, with, I'm guessing that you've seen the most recent episode. Seven.
Oh yes, absolutely.
So, I don't know if you watched it at midnight. I'm assuming you did.
But, oh, I did.
You know, at the midnight watching, the thing that struck me that did not leap out to me at the time, like on paper, that when I was watching it, I was so just grateful on Jubilee's part that she has somebody to lean on during this immediate post-tragedy time. It didn't strike me, you know, because Jubilee's been sort of like leading Roberto along, you know, sort of as the replacement Jubilee, the new, mm-hmm. the new fresh face. But to have somebody that's her age, first of all, there are no other students in this iteration that are Jubilee's age. It's not filled with other students that are teenagers that are mm-hmm. On the cusp of young adulthood and that sort of thing. And so to have somebody else that's just a peer, first of all, is such a gift. And then to have somebody to lean on, that where it's a given. She can literally lean on him and take his hand for him and for her, you know. Anyway, I don't know if that answers your question about the age, but it's just nice to have.
Yeah, no, it is so beautiful and nice, right, Holly? Because I also feel like it's different, like if you were to lean in, like, or Jubilee were to lean in, Wolverine, for that matter,
my uncle
or something. But, yeah, but well, it's for
something
sure.
Else. Yeah, it's just a different kind of comfort.
That comfort, yeah. And for me, I think it's like, I feel myself as a teenager a lot of the times anyway, you know. Hopefully, you know, just, you know, with more maturity, but I just, like, even the way, I guess, you know, I vibrate, or even my voice at times, you know, I'm like naturally just more into the, you know, lower 20s, and, you know, below the 20s in general. I think it's it lives a lot in me. So I don't know, it was super fun to really have to just tap into that. And in fact, I was, you know, from the beginning, I was like, let's not make it at times like him so young. They want to, you know, it's a mature show, so you could, like, just make it more mature even. I was like, oh, okay. So it was a little bit of that battle.
There's a good point about, I think, something that you just said, hinted about, just having that within you, that sort of teenager side. And this is the thing, that every person who watches the show at any age, I mean, unless you're actually a child, but the older viewers, the former fans, we've all been this age, you know. We haven't been the age yet of some of the older cast members. Certainly nobody's the same age as Wolverine and been through those things, but you know, whether you're that age or not now, a lot of our viewers, especially our audience, have been through that and remember it and relate to
that's
it and,
great,
and know what
that's
it's like.
A great point. Yeah,
definitely. And I especially think, you know, a lot of the core audience are, you know, younger Gen X or millennials, and I think our those generations have been sort of trapped in this arrested development, and just because, you know, capitalism has made it really hard
absolutely.
For us to be adults.
Absolutely.
So I think that's definitely something to it. And I like that you did mention, you know, the show beforehand. So, you know, Holly, at the start of the series, there was so much praise that you were taking over the role of Jubilee, even though obviously we love Allison Court,
absolutely.
We love her performance, but, you know, this is the right call to make. But then in episode 6, you get to act with her. So what was that like? Or episode 4?
That was amazing, because we haven't, you know, just the nature of how production is, we don't get to a lot of face-to-face. We don't get to meet the other actors a lot of the time. And it was actually just in press that I saw that the move had her approval, and that she had been the first to say, you know, I'm actively stepping back and it's time to send the elevator down for somebody else, you know? So that already is, you know, not that you need permission, but it's nice to know that you have someone's blessing or, you know, things like that. And then the in sessions, the team would pass along very kind things, very generous things that she said, in her sessions, you know, if she'd heard playback from my recordings or anything like that. So she said, you know, very approving things, you know, that's heartening. And then to actually get to be in the episode together and share the role. I mean, we're sharing this role forever. We're part of the Jubilee gallery now, the Rogues gallery. To actually get to be in the episode together and act, even though we didn't get to record together or anything like that, that's so amazing. I mean, the phrase, you know, passing the torch gets bandied about a lot, but, you know, there's something about passing the torch, but it's also something about having both of our hands on the torch at the same time. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that.
And DJ, just for our listeners, it's like Holly is so, so wonderful. They should put together this watch party with a lot of us cast members and the crew. And she FaceTimed with Allison. You could watch it together. And that's such a beautiful moment. It was really, really extraordinary.
Oh, I love that. That makes like all of my, you know, core fangirl feelings just explode with fireworks in my body. And so Guy, you know, Roberto had a huge moment in the most recent episode in finally telling you know, mom, hi, I'm a mutant, which, as she reveals, she's always known. And yeah. I think that if you change just a couple of words in this, this could have been a coming out moment in any other show. So I'm curious what sort of conversations were had in preparing for that scene in particular.
Oh, interesting. I mean, no conversation in particular. I think, like, obviously, knowing it was such a, you know, a big moment. I don't recall, like, in the session if there was anything specific, but, you know, I just knew it was such an important moment. And, you know, the sessions are always like, it's trial and error in a way, you know, we're trying different versions, different, you know, emotionalities. And so, which is a wonderful experience for me as an actor, I think for all of us, you know, because we get to do the lines and the moments like so many more times. But yeah, no, I think it's just like, it was just so important to connect to that part of, like, you know, that so nervous that I've had in so many times in my life, you know, not in something like this, but oof, many a time. So just, you know, finding those moments within me to, like, then portray, obviously, this important moment.
Oh, definitely. And especially when you're young, a lot of these big feelings are the biggest feelings that you've ever had before. And I think that you portrayed that just beautifully. And this next question is for both of you. Something that I've always appreciated about X-Men is that the mutants have always existed as an echo for anyone in real life who is marginalized by the status quo. But X-Men 97 really is giving these characters the space to show righteous anger toward a society mm-hmm. that treats them not just unfairly, but with bigoted violence, which is something that, unfortunately, a lot of people, myself included, do relate to. So I'm curious if you both could speak on what it's like to give a voice to characters that are part of this team that are often saying the things that so many of us wish we could say, but sometimes feel like we might not be able to for whatever reason.
She passes the torch to me. Okay. thank you. I think it's first of all, like, it's just such a great honor to just be part of this in general, but in that specific point, it's just really wonderful, because I think it is an opportunity that we're all having to see ourselves reflected in that way, and those things that we, you know, maybe can't say or can't express, and or actually don't feel like we can, because I think we all should have that, you know, safe space, you know, to go through our feelings. And so that's the beauty of art, you know, and in this case, television, that you can see yourself reflected in a way and expressed, and then you can go through that emotions together with these characters. So, I mean, to me, it's just such a great honor. And I think they're, you know, the creators are doing it beautifully, and it's been so well, you know, portrayed and thankfully very well received by our viewers.
Absolutely. 100%. And I want to echo what you said about that being the whole point of art, right? Art is what expresses, I think there's a line in, there's a play, I'm going to butcher this. It's a play, there's a play called The History Boys. And there's this history teacher, and he's not just history, he's teaching sort of like everything, but he says something about art is a, or maybe he says it about poetry, but there's something about coming across something in writing, and I'm just going to extend that to art or, you know, entertainment or something like that, that you thought was just for you, like that you had, were the only person who ever experienced this. And when you read it or see it, you realize that somebody else has been through that too. And a lot of the people coming to, a lot of the fans, a lot of the people who are, you know, coming up to us at, you know, wherever, and conventions or something like that, or just, you know, messaging, that is the messaging is that it's not just somebody, it's not just whoever created or wrote that thing that has been through the same thing. It's so many people. It's so many more people than you would ever have expected that this is for, as it turns out, you know? And if you know, I don't want to speak for the writers, obviously, Beau DeMeo, the prevailing voice through all of this, You know, this the whole show, it's his vision, it's his voice, but also the team of other writers. This episode was by JB Ballard and Charlie Feldman, and you can tell that they have poured their experiences and their heart and soul into this. And oh my God, there's so many conversations in this episode alone. The conversations between Huberto and Jubilee and Rose's mother, and then Beast and Trish Tilby, right? Ooh, what an important yes. conversation there, and so gratifying. I mean, you asked what it was like for us to be able to be part of this expression, of this conversation, and it's so gratifying to get to help to share this message. But yeah, I had another point. Yeah, whatever. I'll let it go.
It happens. It happens. But I think that you really nailed it when you were saying, like, it's, you know, it's not just one person. It can be for everybody, because there's such great writing in this show, in that you watch these situations and it can be read as like, oh, this is speaking to racism. Oh, this is speaking to, you know, homophobia or transphobia or, you know, ableism or whatever, like add an ism. It can speak to all of it. And that is such a hard thing to do, where the more specific the show gets, the more universal that it feels.
Absolutely. That's the rule. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, why I think so many people hold the X-Men so sacred after all these years, because I know for me, especially watching the original series as a kid, like that was, you know, the expression feeling seen gets thrown all around a lot, but you know, it is true. Like,
absolutely.
I still have a single colored streak in my hair because I love Rogue. Like, it's maybe not white, but that's, you know, that's part of it. Yeah. And so being able to tell these stories, something you said earlier, Holly, in ways that the original series wasn't allowed to at the time. So I'm curious if you could speak to that as well, where these stories have always been at the heart of the X-Men, but now it's allowed to be a little bit more explicit. So what is that responsibility like for the two of you?
The responsibility, I would say, just speaking only for myself, it actually is a lot. I feel like the people who really have to be brave, because we're just actors, you know, we're at this, we don't come in until very late in this stage. So really, I feel like it has to go to the writers and creators. It has to go to Bo, it has to go to JB, it has to go to Charlie, it has to go to Emmy, it has to go to, you know, it like, and Jake, it's, and so many other writers that I'm not naming, but that I can't call to mind right now. Those people who are sharing us, making themselves very vulnerable, you know, in some ways they're sharing their like coming out stories and stuff like that, but also putting it into the media like this and putting it into art and putting it out for the world. That's a whole other kind of coming out. You know, multiple comings out.
Absolutely.
In one lifetime.
And it's the reason why it's just so brilliant. I keep, you know, coming back to this word, you know, brilliance. It's really genius like, because we talked about the age range, how it can, it's been like reaching like a broad range, right? But then also the themes, the amount of themes, they're so deep and profound, right? And like you said, it was beautifully said, BJ, about like, you know, the more specific it gets, the more universal it gets, which is very hard to do. And so, yeah, I mean, I agree with Holly. I mean, the responsibility, was huge, but I've been saying this, like, for me, I've been so surprised. I don't know, like when I got it, and what I talked most about is like, you know, it's a Brazilian character, you know, it's like Latin representation that was also so huge and so important. I'm so honored, in that sense. And I think to me, it was like, first, as I was preparing and I was doing this, it's like, I wanted to give, obviously my best performance, but like the justice to the representation of my country and this, you know, first Brazilian superhero that the Marvel created. But I just did not expect this huge hit that it's been, obviously, and the impact it's been having. And so I am just so surprised, and you know, positively so, by that whole like representation, or like you said, people coming to me or writing to me on Instagram, like I'm being seen, oh, how great to see a Latin in the show, and all these things that I never was not foreseeing, you know, so.
point that you made is like, it's so perfect to go into my last question before they kick me out on time wise. But, you know, the superhero characters are characters that have such longevity. They've been around forever. But once you've played these characters, you become that character for a group of fans. You know, I know this is a Marvel property, but it's like Michael Keaton is my Batman kind of thing. So what is it like for the two of you to know that moving forward for people watching now, but also people who will continue to discover X-Men 97 as the years go on, that you are their Sunspot, you are their Jubilee? What does that feel like for you as a performer?
I would say very briefly and simply, it's truly an honor, and it's still, and I think it'll be maybe forever, surreal. Really.
It's fantastic. But it's also it is you're one part of this of a you become one part of a full legacy, because mm-hmm. now, you know, I'm, you know, of the Michael Keatons, right? There's Michael Keaton, there's also Kevin Conroy, and there's all, it's a family of Batmen. And the same way there, you know, it's me, there are now multiple Jubilees, and we're still only two parts that, we're the only ones to voice Jubilee, but there have been, you know, little cameos that people were very excited to see by Lana Condor or whoever in mm-hmm. the movies. And then not to mention the full canon of 60 years worth of comic, I mean, she wasn't in all 60 years, but the comic book versions, like the Jim Lee Jubilee is not necessarily the same Jubilee that I'm voicing and that Allison voiced, you know? We are this family of Jubilees, and sort of in the same way that, like, the Spider-Verse, you know, like, the Spider-Verse right. movies have come out, they're so great, but it's that sort of thing of, like, you don't have to do it alone. You're not by yourself. You're one very unique portrayal in this entire universe, multiverse of cavalcade of family.
Beautiful. Well, that is the time that I have with you both today. Thank you so, so much for talking with me, and congratulations on such an incredible show. I am so stressed out about what's going to come next. I don't know if I'm emotionally prepared.
Right. Oh, by the way, I remember what I wanted to say earlier. It was just that story about the coming out thing. I've already told Guy this, but my friend, after the first episodes dropped, texted me saying that he cried when Roberto talks says that thing about not being out to his
parents. Yeah, yeah.
You know. Anyway.
It's one of my favorite scenes, by the way. It really is, because then it becomes very, very funny right after.
Yeah,
It's wonderful. I didn't cry, but I definitely had the deep breath of like, oh, I remember that feeling. Oh, I remember it. Alrighty. Well, thank you both again, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thanks so much.
BJ. Bye. Good to see you, Holly. Bye-bye.
All right, before we go, I wanted to ask you guys a couple more questions. First up, what's up with Wolverine these days? What's he doing? What's he getting up to?
You know, he hasn't had anything major happen. You know, there's still that tension between him and Scott and Jean Grey, because Wolverine, you know, has feelings for Jean. Jean did kiss Wolverine at one point, which was an interesting moment, but didn't necessarily go anywhere big. He's just still Wolverine, honestly. Like, there's I'm curious to see if anything major happens for him before the end of the season.
Okay, and then the final question is, what do you guys want to see from this show? Like, now that you're sort of back into this world that we didn't, honestly, like a few years ago, I mean, I never would have thought this was possible, that they would have picked up the same storyline and sort of basically like made the show that the way that they've made it. Now that you're in it, now that you're whatever it is, seven episodes in to the season, what are your hopes and dreams for what the show might do moving forward? BJ, let's start with you.
I want humanity's reckoning with how badly they've been whiffing it in their treatment of the X-Men, which, again, that's fantasy wish fulfillment for me. And I want my girl Rogue to be happy, because right now she's really unhappy, and rightfully so. And I just want good things for her. I want happiness for her. She's had a rough life. She deserves a break.
Okay, so aside from presumably a Deadpool cameo, Brad, what else do you want from the show?
Honestly, I would prefer another Spider-Man cameo as opposed to doing a Deadpool cameo. I feel like Spider-Man would be a lot more fun, since we know that he's actually already a part of the X-Men universe, and there was even a little Easter egg nod to him in the first episode of X-Men 97. As far as what I would want to see, there's there are still so many comic arcs that haven't been covered in the animated series yet, even though they really dug into a ton of them in the initial series run. I don't really have anything specific, honestly. If anything right now, I think I'm just along for the ride.
There's no character where you're like, oh man, justice for Nightcrawler or whatever. Like, no, you know,
Nightcrawler is back, and he's actually been a really touching element in the series. Yeah, he eulogizes Gambit at his funeral. So
it's
that's
perfect.
That's,
it's so
beautiful. it really is. I think that since they've already done Days of Future Past, it might be interesting to see if they could pull off Days of Future Present. Because that's a big one. But
what happens in that again?
Oh my gosh.
Well, just in like one sentence, like broadest possible terms.
It includes an alternative future. There's time travel stuff. It involves the Fantastic Four and Reed and Susan's mutant son. It's the kind of stuff that they haven't been able to do in the MCU yet because they haven't introduced the Fantastic Four, but it would also require linking an animated version of the Fantastic Four to the X-Men. So like that's really a pipe dream.
Okay. Wow. All right. Well, you know, you never know what could happen now that Marvel Studios is taking on this whole project. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm glad to hear that both of you are still enjoying the show and that it seems to be going over pretty well with fans still. So do we know how many episodes are in this season? Is it 10? Is that right?
Yeah, it's 10. So we've got three more after this, and it's a multi-part episode where it's all the same thing.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So you were being literal earlier when you said a three-part finale. I didn't realize that. Okay. Excellent. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode of Slash Film Daily. You can find much more about X-Men 97 at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features that you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.